You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined this week by Chris, and Nicole. Welcome, team.
Hello.
How's it going? It is Fanboy versus the Stash, if you're watching the video version of this.
Lift your head above your mic, Danny.
Kind of sporting a porno stash, I guess you would call
it. If I knew we were fighting the Stash this week, I would have looked specifically for comics with people with awesome mustaches.
I know.
I did have Secret Warriors. Dum Dum Dugan was in it.
There you go. Great mustache.
So. And you know what else Dum Dum Dugan was in? A film JD still hasn't seen yet.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh.
I have caught a lot of ridicule on this show this week.
You had to do one thing.
You're a host of a comic book podcast. You should watch Captain America.
That's easy for you to say.
It should be your job.
I know. Yes. And
for God's sakes, weren't you guys talking about the Avengers yesterday? Captain America is the first Avenger.
So also, if you missed out,
totally ruined our credibility yesterday.
Chris and I did along with Brian, did a Avengers panel at the Wilkes Library Con.
I heard that was pretty awesome.
It was interesting. It was really cool. Everybody that was there seemed really cool. So, there was even some people, some cosplayers. That was kind of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. So, but it was good. It was a good crowd. We talked about Avengers sort of. So maybe we'll do that again next year. Be maybe more prepared. Probably not talking about Avengers, I would assume, since that'll be old hat.
Transformers are next year. So.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a Transformers panel going, which would be really cool. And I would be down for that as well. So we'll see. Yeah, Transformers I can talk about forever. I'll bore all those people. I will clear the room. We can clear the room in 10 minutes talking about Transformers. These guys are geeks. You know, like the guy in the guy in the Picard uniform is like, these guys are geeks. I gotta get out of here. This is crazy. We would love to talk about news this week. There's none.
Out.
So. Well, we had a brief discussion in the pre-show, but it got a little too heated, and there was a little too much ownage flying around that it just doesn't seem suitable for mainstream consumption.
I don't know about ownage.
I do.
I'll just say that we had differing viewpoints, probably due to our different... nationalities, as you pointed out, or upbringings.
Different upbringings.
So,
I wish I had a bell, because I'd rain it now. Round two.
No, I.
The actual news itself is that DC has publicly spoken out to address some of the concerns that were repeatedly raised at the San Diego Comic-Con last weekend regarding the lack of female creators on the new 52, which was something we ourselves touched upon whenever we were talking about the solicitations originally. There is a pronounced lack of them. It's not a good thing. And DC has said they acknowledge the concerns of people and that there will be projects from several noted female creators coming down the pipe very soon, and they just can't talk about them yet.
Fair enough. We'll see what happens from there. So,
we also got the Phantom Bane.
That's true. We did actually. Yeah, we got there was a set photograph of Bane came out today, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I saw some really bad cam that was from the side, and you couldn't see anything other than Bane standing on a car and sort of pointing or something. They're filming in Pittsburgh, so I wonder if Chicago was almost a character in the last film. So I wonder what.
Yeah.
Filming in Pittsburgh is going to do. Pittsburgh is not necessarily the most distinctive of cities. So,
That's definitely not no luchador mask.
No.
It's not?
No. Almost looks like a breathing mask or something.
Oh, yeah, it's some kind of thing. I mean, if I could work on the assumption that it's some sort of inhalant system for venom, I guess I'd get done with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's probably more plausible from, you know, the sort of real-world approach, I guess.
Tubes in the brain.
Than
not
tubes
so
in the brain, yeah. No.
Oh, God, I'm looking at it now. Oh.
Cut the tubes! So. Yeah, no, it's not what you think of when you think of Ben, is it?
No. But
not that I could...
That's what's
Someone
his
was
name?
Telling
Tom,
me.
Tom Hardy?
Tom Hardy, yeah.
The only game he's seen like
it. It says it almost looks Predator-like.
I guess if you squint your eyes and sort of look to the side, it might. But I mean, that's not the first place that I went, I guess. So
you went with Gimp Mask, didn't you?
Yes. I mean, I can't. I see those. I see those a lot of places that they're not, though. So, you know, grocery store. Or,
it looks like he's got teeth.
You know,
monstrous teeth.
It may
like
be
a mouse.
Invoking that feeling.
Might
I don't
be intentional.
Know. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. That's next year, right? Is it next year?
Next year, yeah.
Next summer.
Next summer is already shaping up to be a big year. We got what? Yeah, that
Avengers,
Spidey,
Dark Knight.
I just heard something else that is coming out next summer. There was a remake of Total Recall. It's going to be out.
Yeah.
Yeah. With. Yeah. is it who's in Fright Night?
Get your ass to Mars.
Who's the guy?
Farrell.
Colin Farrell. Yeah, Colin Farrell is going to be the lead in Total Recall remake. There is no way. I don't. Part of what made that movie awesome was Arnie. I don't know how, you know. Yeah. And the eyes popping out. That was really the other thing for me. That was
that they'll can do again. It'll look
crap. Is Total Recall on Netflix? I kind of want to watch it.
It might. I don't know. God, it is a classic sort of terrible.
I think I have it on VHS like somewhere.
I've been wanting to watch kind of crappy future movie type stuff lately. So I wanted to watch Demolition Man the other day. Now I want to watch Total Recall.
There you go. Blue skies over Mars. So, yeah, but next summer is going to be yet another summer where I'm broke. So hopefully not. Anyway, so we got those. There you go. News. I don't know what else to say really. I'll try to see Captain America this week and maybe we can talk about it next week.
Well, in a non-spoiler commentary, it's very good.
Yes.
So, yeah,
I'm glad you liked it.
Oh hell yeah.
Even though
I mean, I would say it's on a par with Thor. I think the fact that I like Thor more than Captain America as a character probably makes me lean more still towards Thor. But if I was being objective about it, I'd probably put Cap just a little bit ahead. And if I was being even more objective, I would admit that X-Men First Class was better than both of them.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Well, you know,
if I was being objective, and nobody ever accused me of that.
I haven't seen Captain America yet, but just because it's America, I know it's the best.
Yeah.
So,
hey, you know, that's a funny thing, actually, because it's when I was watching it, one of the things that I took away from it that I enjoyed the most, that in no way, really, is the film about America, fuck yeah. That's not it. It's about the heroism of man.
Well, that's not right. That's not right at all.
But that's what makes it so good, because, you know, we've had, as far as Marvel movies goes, we've had Iron Man, we've had Thor. Their stories about douches who eventually come around to the way of heroism. And we've had Green Lantern, which was about a douche who didn't.
Jay, did you ever see Green Lantern, by
No,
way?
Didn't see that either. No,
But in this one, it's about a genuinely good man and an honest hero from the outset. Who becomes a hero because it's what he does. Heroism is not something that's dropped into his lap that he is forced to live up to the ideals of. It's something he wants to live up to being. And the journey that they put him on to get him there is just so good as well. I mean, the whole USO show idea that they have with it and whole arc. Thing. Also, keep your eyes peeled for the Human Torch if you didn't.
I saw that.
I heard about that.
What?
I heard about that in my shop.
You'll have to tell me later, so don't spoil it.
Later, keep your eyes peeled for him.
Yeah, I've heard. I have heard that that's in there somewhere. So I do. I'll be on the lookout for that.
I haven't seen it more than once. I was wondering if there's other things I missed, but I did see that, and I thought that was pretty awesome.
I couldn't spot anything else major except for like the fact that the first time Arnim Zola appears, his head is on a little TV screen.
That's awesome.
The only person in the whole theater who laughed, and I was just like, fuck all y'all.
Oh, as a
comic book movies, go see Cowboys and Aliens. It's fun.
There's another maybe story. I think that came behind Smurfs, didn't it? I think.
Actually, I'm looking at it right now. It is a draw. They don't have the official estimates. It's a difference between $0.2 million right now.
I know it. I heard. My understanding is, though, it lost Friday, at least. Friday was.
It did. It lost Friday to Smurfs. Who the hell is watching Smurfs when you can see Harrison Ford and Daniel Craig?
The children, families. Yeah.
But do children today
wants to see it. I don't know why.
Okay, well, I was going to say, do children today know what the Smurfs are? But
no, yeah.
Mine doesn't.
La, 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 yeah, how can you? You
he
know.
Knows because he saw a Burger King commercial, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, valid point. I assume this is not for the number one spot, by the way.
That's for number one. Yep, it's Cowboys number Aliens, one. Number one, number two, right there.
I mean, the day hasn't officially ended yet. Right now, it's at $0.2 million between the two of them, and Smurfs is winning.
Yeah, they're both.
I'm looking at it.
For the number one spot, the week after Captain Freaking.
Yeah, Captain dropped 61% right now. He's at 24.9. So, yeah, that's going to be a slow going.
It's just such a crowded summer. This was just a crowded as hell summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys, after this podcast is over with, go watch Cowboys and Aliens.
Apparently we need to go watch Captain America. That movie needs some help.
Yeah.
I honestly would rather go see Captain America again.
Yeah,
I think so, to be honest.
I think even Fred Van Lent, who didn't he co-write that, I think?
It's something to do with the comic, I think.
He wrote the comic. That's what I mean. I think there was some comment that someone was saying it wouldn't work or something. He retweeted earlier in the weekend, which I thought was funny. But anyway, all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's comics. That. Comics things. See, we tied it back around to comics. How's that?
Well, yeah. Cowboys and Aliens was a comic.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We tied the movie discussion back around the comics.
There you go. Okay.
See, we made it. We went full circle. So
Smurfs was a comics before.
It was. Not, I forgot about that.
Well, you know, I saw some listing somewhere of comic book movies, and they had Green Hornet on there. And I was like, huh? That was a radio serial. I mean, yes, it had a comic, it wasn't a comic originally. So, anyway, lots of things have had. I'm gonna Kiss had a comic. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So when Kiss makes their movie,
based on the comic. No, it's not. That's not.
With their blood.
It depends whether or not they're gonna have superpowers in it.
Yeah. Yeah. God. Oh, they probably need money. Anyway, okay, comics.
Stitch.
Chris.
Yes. Lead off. Me?
See, oh, no, Chris, no. See, Chris gave me crap before the show because saying I was using full name. So, no more. It's just Chris and Chris now.
When you're speaking directly to me in private conversation, you don't have to refer to me with my full name. But for the benefit of the listening audience, what do you think of the listeners?
I am only thinking of you, sir. You are my one true focus. So,
God, we need some awesome sets in the background.
I think me and Triple need to leave you to alone.
All right. Anyway, Triple, what do you got?
I've got. Speaking of that movie that you did not go see, which is awesome, I have Captain America and Bucky.
Is that also awesome?
It's okay. I mean, it's an origin story, and you'll never guess whose origin story it is. It's
no
Bucky.
Way.
Oh, it's Bucky. Well, great. We get to learn the origin of a character that just kicked it.
I think this is the first issue, and I mean, since they did the new Captain America book,
it is. Yeah, it is.
I think so. And it's 620, which I find it kind of weird. Why would they? Why would they? You know, retitle this one, call it Captain America and Bucky, and then just do like a whole new comic and make it be Captain America. Why wouldn't this be Captain America, and then like you make a whole new title?
Because that's Marvel thing.
That's what they've been doing with Iron Man and Thor.
They did it once, and now they can't get themselves out of it. They just keep doing that. So.
Yeah. Of course, the thing about Iron Man was the numbers were still on the high 20s when they did it, so it didn't really seem to matter. And with Journey into Mystery, at least, like that was just the comic reverting back to the name that it had before Thor. This is the truly weird one.
Yeah. So I wanted to try it out because like I don't want to buy both books because I just think it's too much. I'm fine with one Captain America book, but I don't want two. So I thought I'd try it and see if I liked it. And it's not bad. I mean, it's not... because it's an origin story, I mean, it seems like this is going to be more of the adventures in the 40s or adventures in, like, other time stuff. It kind of has to be if it's Captain America and Bucky because guess what? Spoiler, he's dead.
Yeah. You know? Boy, there was a point Brian could not be so happy that Bucky is dead. He was like, we're at the panel yesterday, and, like, Brian's just like, and thankfully they killed off the imposter... Captain America, and now Steve Rogers is back. And Chris and I are like, dude, it wasn't... What? Man.
Yeah. Relenting.
Now, wait. Someone told me there was a bunch of little kids there. Did that just scare them when you...
I don't know. It's just...
Brian was describing graphic detail how she, like, takes the hammer and just beats him to death.
Ripped his own arm off.
Thankfully, she ripped his arm off and beat him to death with it.
Wow.
You know, for kids.
You should have talked about the Avengers 60 spy show. It'd be awesome.
Anyway, okay. So, anyway, Bucky's origin.
Yeah. One cool thing to mention about the comic is the art's kind of neat looking. The cover, I didn't like care for the cover that much. Cover's just kind of you know. Look, it's Bucky, you know. But art.
I respect that. You better respect that.
Yeah, but the art in the comic, it actually, if you can see it, kind of looks a lot like Lee Weeks or, what's his name? Did Daredevil with Bendis? Maleev?
Yeah,
Alex Maleev? Yeah. It reminds me a lot of that, which I like. I think it looks
Who is
nice
the artist on it?
He is Chris Samney. I think it's...
Oh, he drew Thor the Mighty Avenger with Roger Langridge.
Oh, he did? Okay. Yeah. I don't think I've bought anything that he's done before, but I like it. I think it looks good. It's got, I mean, obviously they're making it look this way just to have kind of like that 40s-ish kind of vibe to it, you know, or maybe not 40s, I guess maybe 30s. Because, well, basically this story is, like I said, it's kind of like an origin for Bucky. It starts in 1935, and it goes in detail about his life before the war, before meeting Captain America, you know, before being a superhero, and it basically just focuses on his family. Like at some point his mom passed away, and then he's basically living with his dad and his younger sister, and they're just sort of, you know, getting by. His dad is like, I believe he's a pilot is what he does. I think he's like sort of a pilot. And one day his dad actually is doing, you know, he's doing maneuvers or he's doing something, you know, and he has an accident and he doesn't come home. His younger sister is sent to like a boarding school or something, but he doesn't go like to like a foster family, or he doesn't go to an orphanage. He kind of gets adopted by the military.
Because that happens.
It did back then.
Worked with Hellboy. Come on.
I mean, in the original comics, like from like the 40s, wasn't he basically like an orphan and he just like lived with the military?
Military base, yeah.
Well, they kind of explain it. You know, his dad's dead. There's no one to take care of him. And all of his, you know, friends, you know, his dad's friends basically, you know, say, hey, if ever anything ever happened to him, you know, your dad wanted us to be the ones to take care of you. So he basically gets adopted by them. And he's basically just doing stuff like he's like the go-getter. Like the guys would want like cigarettes, and he would go and he would get them even though he's underage and sell them to them. And he would like buy dirty magazines for like, you know, the general on the base. You know, he's just the go-getter guy. It's basically just, you know, like I said, his life. I mean, he early on in his life, he would basically get into fights with local kids. And it's got kind of that Daredevil kind of thing to it where, you know, like in the origins. Bucky, like,
the cruel nickname they called him?
They do call him Bucky, but I don't know if it's supposed to be a cruel nickname.
You know, it's just like Daredevil's origin. Is that where it came from?
No. It's not, yeah, like, not like Daredevil. When I'm comparing him to Daredevil, it's like basically Daredevil's dad didn't, you know, want him to fight, wanted him to make something better out of his life. It's kind of the same with his dad. His dad's like, you know, you need to do better than this. And, of course, what does he do? He goes and then he just beats the hell out of the neighborhood kids again. I don't know if you can see that or not. Smack! Of course. Blood. I love it. And that kind of plays in because, like, before his dad dies, that, you know, his dad was basically like, you know, I'm disappointed in you, Bucky. You really let me down here. And he says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. And his dad says, just go to your room. We'll talk about this when I get back. And, of course, his dad doesn't
come. He never came back.
Home unreconciled past.
Yeah, so poor old Bucky, he's got that. The last thing his dad ever did was he was disappointed in him. And that basically plays into the story because he's trying to, you know, he's trying to make something of himself. But he keeps getting into fights. And then, like, the craziest thing happens. Like, he gets into a fight, like, when he's 15 or 16. And he gets locked up in the jail. And, like, a general comes and finds him. And basically the army wants to train this young kid to
bless you.
Some sort of a secret
tried to reach the mute button
or something. I don't know. Like I was saying, they take him out of the jail and then they want him to be some sort of a, you know, soldier, secret agent person or something. Like, you get like these clips of him just doing all kinds of things. He's learning how to fight, and then he's learning how to shoot, and he's behind enemy lines, and he's like, you know, sneaking into bases and stuff. I'm thinking, okay, you know.
Wow.
So they're training him, and then he gets to see Captain America for the first time. But the first time he sees Captain America is old newsreel footage. So, and he's immediately like, you know, this guy's awesome. You know, I guess it's because maybe at that point he's like 15 or something, and maybe to 15-year-olds, if you saw a real living superhero, that would be, you know, the most awesomest thing ever. I don't know.
I'm 29, and it would be the most.
I know. It's just that, like, he really is. He's just amazed by Captain America to the point that just seeing that newsreel footage inspires him, and he actually sees the way he fights, and he starts copying it. Like, everything that Cap does, and even like in the next couple of panels, it'll show like the newsreel footage of Cap like climbing over something, and then it shows Bucky climbing, and then it'll show Cap dodging bullets, and then Bucky, he's kind of dodging them too. So he's inspired now just from seeing Captain America for the first time. And so as all of this is going on, you know, Bucky finally gets to the point where he's fully trained, I guess. He's going off to some mission. They don't tell him anything about it. He's going off with all these other soldiers, and they're just going to this airport somewhere. And they tell him to go out and just fight these guys. And he basically just fights these dudes that are like three times his height and just beats the crap out of them. And then afterwards, the general wants him to meet somebody. And I bet you'll never guess who he's going to meet. Steve Rogers, I would say you're not wrong.
I was going to say Dazzler.
I'm going to say the Crimson
Jacket. I wish
jacket.
It was Dazzler. the military's been training this kid to become Captain America's partner. That's basically what happened.
That sounds terribly reckless. I don't know why. It's like, it's one of those things that's like, it's great in the comic, and it's just like, it totally makes sense in comic book world, and then you think about it for just a second, like, Why would they do that? That's so wrong. That's just...
Well, I mean, throughout Brubaker's run, the idea that they've been putting forward is that it's something that Brubaker came up with, something you see a little hint of in the film itself this week, is that Bucky was the guy who did the dirty work. Captain America, shining Sentinel of Liberty, all cameras on, all the news about, could never be the guy who got his hands dirty, really. Bucky was the one who did the wet works. So that's, you know, they chose a kid with, you know, no family to be disappointed in him, you know, nothing to really lose, and someone who was willing to launch right into a fight, morals and ethics be damned.
I mean, because, like, in some of the Brubaker issues, he would actually have, like, a machine gun shooting up Nazis, and Cap doesn't have a gun. He's just got his shield and everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You can see
a hint of that
in the cartoon, actually, as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, so basically that's what the whole issue was about, is that they were training him to be Captain America's partner. And at the end of the issue, you know, Cap presents him with his costume, and Bucky puts it on, and you got this, you know, classic-looking image here of, you know, Bucky looking at his costume, and he ends it with, and he says, "And that was the day I took off one mask, realizing I didn't need it anymore, and I put on a new one for a new life. But of course, that was where my troubles really began. To be continued." Oh, and the mask. Aww. Oh, the mask thing. I didn't really explain that, but it's basically when his mom died, he talks about how he has to put on a, you know, a happy face for his sister and for his dad, and how he's always had to put these masks on for not, you know, covering not how he really felt, because he was miserable. He was alone. I mean, this whole time he talks about how alone he is, but everybody else he has to, you know, brighten them up, and he has to be the guy that's, you know, he kids, and he's got that smile on his face, and that's basically what he's talking about. You know, traded one mask for another mask, a literal mask.
Ooh. Ooh.
But it's not bad. I like it, but why couldn't they have just done this with, like, a miniseries or something? Why do I need a whole...
Well, ultimately, this is probably going to turn out to be a mini, isn't it? I mean, what is the lifespan of this concept, really?
I don't know. I'd like to finish it, but like I said, I just don't have the money. This is, it's $2.99. I don't know. I think New Cap is $4, maybe.
I think it was maybe just for the first issue. I'm not sure.
I can't afford to get both of them, so I don't know if I'll get the next issue or not. But I wanted to try the first one out, and it wasn't bad. I wouldn't say that it was a bad comic. I just wish there wasn't two comics. I'll say that.
Right on.
Logical.
That's it.
I mean, you know, it's like, it's a wartime setting comic to go along with the mainstream Captain America setting. How necessary is that, you know? Whereas you look at, you know, at least whenever they did War Machine, that was, you know, War Machine was a whole separate character. I mean, now that they've done Journey into Mystery, you know, it's a whole separate way of looking at the world of Thor compared to what Fraction is doing, and it had better not go anywhere anytime soon, frankly.
If you would have asked me 10 years ago if I wanted two Captain America comics, I would have said, hell yes. In fact, when, what was it, Sentinel Liberty came out, I was excited. Two comics written by Mark Waid, oh my god, of course I want that. But now, no. I don't know. Money, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. That's me.
That's it. All right. Nicole.
Okay, I'm going to be reviewing Project Superman.
Ooh.
Part of, we get to find out what happened when he flew away and just left him to die?
No.
No. Backstory. Let me guess. It's a backstory issue.
Yeah, okay. Ha! So, yeah, last time we saw him, he was flying away, and everyone else is getting their asses handed to them. Majorly.
He pays Batman's head, so that's your hero.
Yeah, so Superman's like, bye-bye, save your own stuff. No, so I was just like, oh, what's going to happen? And I wanted to pick up this issue. No, we get even younger Superman. It's not even Superman, it's Superboy, not even Superboy, Super Kid, you know?
Well, I would have told you that you could have expected that, if that's actually why you picked that up. Tie-in books are world-building history establishers, and nothing is tied in with the main series.
I know, but I had hoped, because this is a new way to look at Superman, and so... Yes, it's 20 years from the last time we saw Superman, and when we see him, he's just getting all these experiments done on him. He's being electrocuted. He's being poked and prodded. And his powers are pretty much going off the wall, off the charts. and they call in Mr. Lane, and you guys can't figure out who that is. Mr. Lane. Let's see.
is his first name General?
Just maybe. Asking.
But I'm all for Superman being poked, prodded, and electrocuted. That sounds good.
Yeah, really, he looks like he's in some pain here. So.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming out of his eyes and his mouth. Yeah, so it's so they call him down because the experiment's going haywire. And they have like a little countdown going on through the series. He's like, okay, 39 days, 27 days. You can tell he's planning on something. And then you see him. This is so cute. I do like this part. You see him with the dog. I don't know if you could see that, but they give him the dog.
Is it Crypto?
I think so. They never really say his name. But
yeah, presumably. I mean, it's the skeleton from Flashpoint.
Yeah, so. This is so cute because they're teaching him not to get attached to things even if they're close, you know, because that's how people will use you if you get attached to things. But, of course, it's a cute...
is a dick in any universe.
Yeah, and it's so sad because you're like, you know, he wants to love this dog, but, of course, everyone's telling him, do not get attached. They're going to use it against you. But Mr. Lane is talking to him through telekinesis. I think they don't really... He just says, I figured out a way to talk to him. And I'm thinking that's how it is because it's in different font and everything. So in the meantime, Mr. Lane is going on with the experiment. He's saying, okay, you need to do this and this and this. But he's telling him telepathically, no, you need to do this. So him and Cal, they call him Cal, have this relationship. And he considers him his son eventually. But there is some really cool graphics here. He's the one that teaches him that he could see through things and that he's teaching him how to use his powers. And I don't know if you could see this, but it's really great X-ray drawings. So I thought that was really fun. eventually, after all these ads, pardon me.
is there an ad for the new 52? Because I noticed that in my issues this week.
I think there is at the end. Yes, there is at the
it's
end.
The Justice League one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, well, there's like, you know, the tennis shoes. I really want those shoes. Anyways.
Yeah. It's working.
Huh? Commercialism.
Yeah. Then we're introduced to Mr. Luthor. Whom? Let's see who that is.
Oh, look at John Glover with his glorious mane of hair as well.
Oops. I lost it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Smallville. He brought his son. Oh, who could that be? Well, Lex likes to touch things, apparently, so he's going through stuff that's not his. And they're walking
through...
So
he touches the dog and he loses his hair, right? Right? Right?
Yes. Mr. Luthor wants to see what all this money is going to, and so they're showing him the experiments that they're doing. Unfortunately, they're showing the poor doggy. I don't like that. Yeah, poor dog is getting tortured. But Mr. Luthor, not being the kind and caring father, he's like, okay, Lex, stand here. As the experiment of the dog goes completely haywire, the dog smashes through. He becomes evil and pretty much attacks Lex. Lex is on the ground, bleeding. Some parts are coming out of him. Well, guess what? Bye-bye, doggy. Now you know where the skeleton comes from.
So the dog chews his head off, and that's how he loses his
hair. Among many other things.
He's got... it looked like he went through the throat, a little bit of the arm there, and... Poor Cal, he sees his one and only friend die. So he was warned that they'd use the dog against him, and they did. Well, back at Mr. Lane's office, they find out his daughter sneaks in. This whole military base, but somehow a 7-year-old kid could sneak on. So
flashbacks.
They even mentioned that.
Disturbance from Sector 2.
2. Crash.
So,
how do children sneaking in here?
The thing is, they even mentioned that. They're like, how do you keep on getting in? I thought that was funny.
Because she's good at getting into things and sneaking around.
She wanted to, you bring her dad a birthday cake. And it was so cute. Little Lois. Just to see little Lois. It's so cute. Then you see Cal trying to escape. This is his day. This is his day of escaping. But instead of escaping out the door, he runs into Mr. Lex's experiment where he is using all the powers in the world to make himself into a superhero. So you can see that. Yay! And so they take off. Cal and him take off. And... they defeat pretty much the whole institution. You see Lois being upset because her dad took off without saying bye. And then all of a sudden, Cal and Lois meet for the first time. Ooh, I wonder where this is going to go. and they try to escape. And something bad goes wrong. And then all of a sudden, at the very end... they're headed to the Phantom Zone. That is Mr. Lane.
Wait a minute, how'd they get to the Phantom Zone?
Where did that come from?
Where did they come? Yeah. Did they like turn a hallway and they walk into it or something?
The page out. Mr. Lane has this contraption that's supposed to contain the energy to defeat all the superheroes. It all gets mixed up, and all of a sudden they're fighting and they're in the Phantom Zone.
Well. Lane knows the Phantom Zone by name, doesn't he? He actively activates the device to teleport himself and let her away.
Have you ever heard of the Phantom Zone? Boom, boom, boom. And then the kids are there by themselves. Unfortunately, they lock up Cal and in this area where he can't see anything. He can't do anything. He's just locked up. But it's so cute. The very last panel, he's lasered into the wall a picture of little Lois. It's so cute. So, basically, Mr. Lane and Mr. Luther are in the Phantom Zone, and Lois and Cal have met up. The thing is, it's just like, there's only one more issue. How are they going to wrap up everything within this Project Superman? This was a fun issue. It really was.
You'll buy the next issue, and it'll say, to be continued in Flashpoint number whatever.
Flashpoint number 3, yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
I really like this. I really like seeing this new way of how Cal was experimented on. It can get kind of a little bit graphic, but yeah, I don't know how they're going to wrap up things in one more issue. So, but I recommend it. It was good. I'm not a Superman fan, so this captured my interest. So that's...
honestly, that may be the best Superman comic that's out right now.
I just like a different story about Superman. So like I said, my whole life I knew about this Superman story. This is totally something different. And what the hell happened to Lex? Is he dead? Is he alive?
Probably. He seemed pretty dead.
Is he turning into a rabid dog himself? I don't know. I want to know.
Oh my god, he's a werewolf. That would be awesome.
Team Black! Team Black!
A Kryptonian werewolf. That would be fantastic.
Oh, that's
Metropolis.
Sweet. In Metropolis. Okay. You gotta kill him with a kryptonite bullet. That would be great.
Oh my god.
I would recommend this one. Like I said, even if you haven't read any other Flashpoints, this pretty much starts at the very beginning of Cal's life and his experiment. So, yeah, go out and pick it up. It's the $2.99 price range.
The fun nature of the Flashpoint tie-ins meant we went the first issue of this miniseries without even seeing Superman so that he could be revealed for the first time in Flashpoint number 3.
Right.
So you don't need to read. You know, you can just pick this up.
Yeah.
It's a fun book. I did enjoy it, so...
Cool.
Yay. That's it?
That's it? All right. So I'm actually going to quickly talk about one and talk more about the other, but these are the two one-shot. It's called them one-shot, but I mean, basically they're contained stories coming out of Green Lantern Corps and Green Lantern Emerald Warriors. Not much to talk about out of Core, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, other than to say that the art is absolutely terrible.
Oh my god, it's bad. That cover is good.
The cover is great.
Reiterate, the cover is fine. Get Tyler Kirkham back. He's good. But this dude inside, I'm sorry.
The logic of this story is a bit lacking. The interesting bits are is that, romantically for Kyle, he had kind of been in with this Sora, and they have split after like this War of the Green Lanterns sequence. This particular story opens a few months ago when we see a Star Sapphire Miri, showing them a vision of their true love, and no one else can see it but them. When Sora looks, she sees Kyle. When Kyle looks, he sees Jade. And Sora confesses to Kyle that she saw him, and he, not thinking very clearly, or at least trying to save a discussion, basically says, yeah, I saw you too. And that's sort of...
This was during the Sins of the Star Sapphire story arc from before Blackest Night, wasn't it?
I think this goes back a long time.
This goes back to earlier issues of Green Lantern.
Yeah, and I knew that this sort of had happened, but I wasn't, you know, I hadn't seen this exact moment. And so it had sort of set them on, you know, this path, at least in their minds, that they were destined to be together or whatever, at least from Sora's standpoint. As the story goes on, though, basically there's a bit of a discussion between Tomar 2 and Kyle about, I don't know, his relationship with Sora and, you know, repairing the core because, you know, there's been a little fallout.
Going to want to get relationship advice from an alien fish.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And then this is where the bit gets odd. So the Sapphire Miri comes and, like, opens a wormhole thing, a tether, as she calls it, and pulls Kyle into it, and then Tomar 2 gets pulled in with it. Basically, she set up this whole scenario where she sort of attacked this planet, but just destroyed a bunch of stuff, but didn't kill anybody, to try to get Sora and Kyle to work together because they were destined lovers and she had to protect their relationship, which seemed a little crazy and weird.
She's a Star Sapphire, it makes sense.
Right? Yeah, I guess so.
Crazy and weird.
They are crazy and weird.
So I guess that makes sense within that context. But then, you know, and so Kyle and Sora do end up, you know, working together and sort of getting to a moment of reconciliation. But when Miri explains what she's done, Kyle, not thinking very clearly, is like, look, I didn't even see Sora in my vision. With Sora right there, and she doesn't take that very well. She basically says, stay in your own fucking sector and get the hell away from me.
Did it really say that in the comic? That'd be awesome.
No, it didn't. The line was, never speak to me again, Lantern 2814.4, and stay the hell out of my sector. Yeah. So doesn't even say his name. Just
she doesn't even look at him. She flies away from him.
Yeah, and just flies away from him. So, and Miri's like, I was trying to help. And Kyle blames himself. So anyway, there's also a great bit where Kyle gets hit in the face with, like, sapphire energy and, like, breaks his mask and he has a big gash on his face. But otherwise, the art is absolutely atrocious. I cannot say how terrible... Awesome. Terrible, oh terrible,
you
terrible.
You guys were showing this. You were showing me this at the beginning before we started streaming.
I've got the panel pulled up. I'll show this to the stream. so hopefully you can see that. It looks like Kyle ate about 100 hamburgers just because of the angle. It's a terrible proportioning as far as the angle of the shot. It's just bad. I don't know how to describe it any other way. So anyway.
I mean...
The interesting bit is the reveal, and I don't know how much that'll come into play later, of course, with relaunch and 52 and everything. But
there's one issue left before the relaunch.
Yeah, and these are supposed to be kind of contained stories, so it's not necessarily carrying through. The other story that I have is the Emerald Warriors Green Lantern. This is going to be coming to an end, I guess, shortly. Which is, of course, this is Guy's storyline. Kind of an interesting deal, and I don't know if this ties to any particular canon or is its own thing. Supposedly there was this being that had been entrapped by the Guardians that had a taste for eating Green Lantern energy, And when they destroyed Mogo, like a bit of Mogo blasted open this thing's prison, and it, you know, re-upped its appetite for stuff. So they, for Green Lantern energy in particular, and the thing started tearing up like sector houses, and was on its way to Oa. So they have Guy put together a team of recruits to basically take care of the threat. So he recruits five people to go with him. They go to attack this beast thing, and basically it doesn't show up on the ring, so they can't see where it's at. It looks like an enormous, I don't know, spider lobster thing. They call it the Beast.
Inventive.
Yeah.
That's what I'd call it.
Yeah, very creative, as it were. It immediately consumes, like, three of the lanterns. So it's him and basically... So it's Guy and basically another heavy hitter that are left to try to figure out what to do. They decide to turn themselves into an enormous bullet and fly into his stomach, because that's
what you do.
What you do. What they find is very horrific. About 50 lanterns that have been sort of absorbed into the lining of this thing's stomach, slowly drained of their powers and yet kept alive. So
Nummy.
Think Sarlacc.
Knew what it was to be roasted in the belly of a slur.
Yeah, yeah. So along those things.
You just think that was just the appetizer? He's just saving the rest of them for the entree?
Well, he's basically just slowly devouring that energy. Ew. Over time. And it's keeping them alive, because if it killed them, the rings would leave. So he's just slowly draining the energy and keeping them alive in the process. It's kind of nasty. So Guy charges up the existing lantern's rings and basically uses their energy to blow the thing up. And that's it. So other than that sort of macabre image, which I'll show here, is the... I don't know if you can see this very well, but there's... and I'll show this to the crew as well. There's just sort of an image of all of these lanterns sort of just lining the stomach of this monster thing. So,
how did that panel look, at least?
Oh, no, the art in this book is great. No, the art in this book is really good.
Who's on the art for that one?
This one is Batista.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, great art out of this. Now, this book looks good.
He's a good wrestler. Batista.
Yeah, he did, I think he did some work on Greenland, or no, a Booster. I think he drew some of those, some issues of Booster and stuff as well. So, no, good art.
Was this the regular monthly book, or is this like a special Emerald Warrior?
Well, I mean, it's all month to month now, and this is pretty much, there's one more issue of this, I think. There's one more issue of Core and one more issue of Emerald Warriors, and then Emerald Warriors.
Warriors is not coming back, is it? It's one of the books not coming back.
Warriors is not coming back, right? It's so okay. Yeah. That the lineup is going to be. It'll be Green Lantern, Core. You'll have
just that
the
Guardian
Kyle's
book,
which is the Guardians.
And the Red Lantern
book. Then the Red Lantern book. So yeah, this book's not coming back, but Guy'll basically be back with John in Core, since Kyle's going to be in the Guardians book.
And he's in Justice League International.
Yeah, and he'll be in Justice League International with Booster Gold.
Awesome. Yes. Can't wait for that.
So that's going to be good. Batman, Booster Gold, very classic JLI lineup. So, but no Power Girl, because she doesn't exist. So
we don't know.
Oh, rude.
She better exist. You're writing a letter to DC Comics.
DC Comics. I was recently disgusted to learn.
There is no Power Girl.
I couldn't care less about female creators, but when I heard that Power Girl...
Why isn't there Power Girl? We need more females in comics with enormous boobs hanging out.
It's a gender equality issue.
Right. So
in all fairness, I like Power Girl, even without her big boobs.
I mean, it depends on the depiction.
Seriously,
yeah.
Though, JSA, when Jeff Johns was writing it, you know, Power Girl was awesome. Just yeah.
So, anyway, that's my two. There you go. Green Lantern stuff for the win. Chris, it's your turn.
first thing I'm going to talk about this week is this week's Secret Avengers. It's the final issue of the four issues done by Nick Spencer in the interim between Brubaker's run ending and Warren Ellis starting next issue. And it is another solo character focus issue. The first issue we had Beast and the giant stone robot ghost of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington that we talked about a couple months ago. Last issue was a fairly unremarkable. It was a solid but unremarkable affair about Valkyrie and her past. And this is a very interesting and non-standard issue. It's a Black Widow-centric issue. And it is... she discovers there's a website claiming Captain America isn't dead.
Talking about Bucky Cap.
That's because he's dead. Yeah. And so she and Bucky were shacked up. If you haven't been reading Brubaker's Captain America, you may not know Black Widow and Bucky were knocking
boots. Well, we're just revealing all the secrets of Bucky today.
Well, this is no secret. But she busts in the window of this company, but it's like four young people, and demands to know where the information is. Tries to deny the personal stake she has in the affair. Just claims she's here on Avengers business. Gets into a very snotty conversation with that bitch. I was really hoping a bullet was going to go into the shoulder of, just to teach her a lesson. And the issue transitions then into Black Widow from a rather angry position, talking to all of these young people about death in the Marvel Universe.
I did not see this coming. It just sort of hit me.
I did not. basically, let's see, where are we going here? One of the cynical young people says, you know, he admits that they've just made it up. They've just made up the fact that Bucky, they have on this completely made up. A couple of anonymous quotes, a tease here and there, and we place our bet. And the Black Widow says, bet? And he says, well, come on, I mean, we've got good odds. This isn't the first time Captain America's died. And when he comes back, we'll look like we're way ahead of the game. People will remember the details. They'll just remember we said it first. And, you know, they're taking the position that superheroes come back to life all the time, and they're trying to capitalize on that factor. And I don't think it's ever... It's very meta, but the Black Widow addresses... even in a world where you can come back from death, what this means to the people who experience it, you know? Let's see, let me just go through here. One of the girls in the office talks about how her grandfather died from cancer and how he gets he doesn't get a second chance. He never gets to come back, you know? And, you know, if superheroes want to be treated like real people, they need to start playing by real people rules. Dead doesn't mean dead for real. Dead means dead for real people. It's very meta, you know. This is the voice of the whiny internet fandom, you know. You can get mad at us, but quite frankly, if I were you, I'd be more worried about why most people only seem to give a damn about you when you croak. You know, to be honest, it's not even just the internet fandom. It seems like it attacks about four different camps as a story. It targets the very idea, the cynicism of characters dying and coming back. It targets the people who just immediately snap to and whine. And if we just steal a quote here, where is it? This generation loves their cynicism. They can't wait to tell you how unaffected they are by everything around them, which is so very true. You know, as soon as somebody dies, comic book fans are all, oh, well, man, he's going to be back, so it doesn't matter. You know?
But it, hey, you know, I wasn't like that when Bucky died. I was like, all right.
Expected. but then this guy says about why people only give a damn about you when you seem to croak. Almost seems to be a comment on the popular press, who only ever run a story about comic books if somebody's dying, you know. There's a lot of different parties seem to be getting attacked in this. But, you know, Black Widow brings, you know, the guy says, dying's got to mean something because I'd sign up for your kind of death, 6 month nap, and you come back healthier than ever and everybody loves you. And Black Widow says, is that really how you see it? Well, isn't it? What's her name with the X-Men? Jean Grey. She likes doing it well enough. Let me ask, have any of you ever been in a car accident? Not some little fender bender, the real thing. Well, my roommate did. She's got like three surgeries. And now I guess she gets very nervous on long car rides or riding in cabs. Yeah, sure. This nice long nap you describe, it's preceded by a death. Not a coma. We're talking about actual physical death. How traumatic an experience is something like that? To have felt the life drain out of you and then come back from that. To have known that fear. To have felt that cold.
that changes you. And then for them to go from that back to the front lines within hours at a time, is that something you would sign up for? You know, it's like, damn, I never really sat down and thought about this. Yeah, if this is the real emotion that, that people have to go through, you know.
And they preceded this with panels showing characters that have actually died, like Hawkeye and Daredevil and
Adam,
Colossus.
And it's like, you know, and the basic idea is that, you know, after talking about the people who actually then go through the experience, you talk about the people that left behind as well. You know, you don't even, people, the superheroes don't even feel the trauma because they're in, they live in a world where these people can come back. But Black Widow counters with, you know, what if they came back after you had tried to build a new life for yourself? Shows a picture of Emma Frost and Cyclops. What if you'd both changed so much that everything you had was already gone? Hawkeye and Mockingbird. Could it ever really be the same again? We're skipping forward a bit here. If you knew there was a chance, even a small chance, that he could come back, you might never move on. You might just stay there waiting, hoping, pretending it didn't happen. Could you ever really heal knowing that? It's a very interesting study of just what death actually means for the whole thing. Now, it is very meta. It is. And there is a slightly, you know, there is a bit of a general scowl thrown in the direction of the grumpy internet fandom, and they are called out in this. Yeah, I mean, I decided to go around. I looked at a couple of message boards just to seeing what the opinions on the issue were generally. They seem quite divided. A lot of people seem to quite enjoy it, but the louder people certainly seem to be the ones who weren't very satisfied with the issue. And frankly, I have to wonder if that's because they weren't the kind of people that the story was directly attacking. And nobody liked, you know, nobody liked to have their, to have all the fallacies in the arguments they so often make called out like that. Although, also, to be fair, the issue was solicited as the Black Widow going after the mastermind behind Fear Itself, which this issue is most definitely not.
Those diabolical bastards at that website.
if I am honest about it, as much as I actually enjoyed it when I sat down and read it, as I reflected on it, I was quite disappointed to discover that it wasn't actually about Black Widow dealing with Bucky's death. It was Black Widow sitting down with some strangers and talking about the nature of death, but no real emotional connection was being made with her. Because, you know, well, it's like I said, you know, you guys didn't have as much of a problem with it as I did when we talked about Fear Itself number 3. But I'm not particularly happy about Bucky's death, because it's so offhanded in such a
well,
very...
Well, it wasn't handled well. I mean, I don't care for that version of him, but I can agree with you. It was not handled well at all.
So offhanded. In a book like just filled with subject matter that's so inappropriate for it, and Bucky's not barely even mentioned in Captain America number 1, and Captain America and Bucky is a flashback comic, so where does anybody mourn? In what?
See,
comic,
I sort of thought it would be the Captain America Bucky comic. Thought that's where they would do it, and it would Bucky be like maybe a funeral, and then like Cap would remember the first time he met him or something. You know, it would be something where, you know, the characters dealing with. His loss, but it's not that, it's something else.
There's been absolutely no eulogy for Bucky whatsoever, and at the start of the issue, I thought that's what we were getting into. While I was momentarily distracted by the pleasingly meta nature and the genuinely good ideas that the issue puts forth, I was disappointed that there was no real resolution, no idea of Natasha coming to terms with her feelings or even getting to act out her anger, because this bitch needed a bullet in her shoulder.
Which she never gets.
She's not going to shoot anybody. She can't shoot anybody. Oh, can that? And I was like, yeah, come on, do it. But she didn't. But of course, you know, she talks with the editor of the website, and the end of the story is, oh, superheroes are all right, really. You know, superheroes are greater than human. They're something for people to aspire to and to idealize. And they need to be more than human in the eyes of the people. In order to maintain that, that's the moral that's coming across. Superhumans are people to themselves and amongst their own lives, but they need to be more than that. The people need them to be more than that. So it's an interesting dichotomy that's studied there. But as I say, I'm a little disappointed that it didn't actually deal with Black Widow dealing with her feelings about Bucky's death. But what I will say is that it's got some very lovely art. It's written by Nick. Baxter, as I said, and Scott Eaton is on the artwork with a Black Widow. Seriously, I mean, check that out. That is the sexiest Black Widow I've seen in a very long time.
Human. That's like a size negative one waist.
I would totally be happy with him staying with the book.
Yes.
She couldn't even stand.
Shut up, JD.
Saying. Anyway. But no, it's interesting. I mean, but talking about the death thing, I mean, that kind of ties back again to that whole, you know, and I didn't mention it so much, but in like the Green Lantern issue, when, you know, Kyle saw Jade and he didn't see Sora, his explanation to Sora was, look, Jade was dead. She was gone. You know, am I going to live in the past and,
you
know, pine for
someone? It was eerily similar because I read that issue
And it was like, he's like, am I going to just pine for someone that's dead or try to move on? I chose life. And so it is kind of interesting. It kind of ties that back around. So, but
I liked the issue, though. I was pretty surprised by it because Secret Avengers, I hadn't cared for in a while, but when
Nick Spencer has
done some good issues. Yeah, I've enjoyed them.
I mean, his point one issue was the best issue he did. It was the one that made the best use of the team. The subsequent issues have been individual character spotlight issues, which is, you know, not really what you want three issues in a row for a team book, but he didn't really have the room to do anything huge and meaningful with the whole team, and he has definitely managed to do one better than Bendis's pointless little wandering in and out team-based crossovers for Fear itself. You know, it doesn't do much to dissuade the reputation of the book as, well, you know, Brubaker wrote Captain America and his Avenging Friends, and in this it's just spotlight issues on the Avenging Friends, you know. Nobody who has written this yet, apart from that point one issue, has really managed to make the team function, make the team believable as a team and give everybody equal time. You know, the one thing I read that did that the most, funnily enough, was the first issue of Onslaught Reborn, of all things. Onslaught Unleashed. But still, it's a good issue. Some interesting topics raised. Bit meta. Bit more meta than people might like. And it's not going to fulfill your desire for a team book. But if you're a Black Widow fan, I'm not particularly a Black Widow fan, but I like the topics raised. And it's Spencer's last, so we'll see what happens with Warren Ellis. I would assume things are going to go batshit crazy in the next issue. It's what's going to happen when Warren Ellis comes on.
It better be a good issue, because if it's not, I may drop Secret Avengers, honestly.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine it's not going to be a bit of crazy fun. But yeah, I mean, Spencer did enough to keep me on for his run, but Secret Avengers needs to pull its finger out and get up to the quality of at least one of the other Avengers books, because certainly
it's $4 for goodness
sake.
Yeah,
this is not.
It needs to be better.
It is not of the, you know, it's like you can see why Avengers is $4. You can see why New Avengers is $4. Secret Avengers is not $4 caliber.
There's a question. Is Thunderstrike on this team?
Nope.
No, he is not.
Okay. It's got Moon Knight and Ant-Man and War Machine and Valkyrie.
Yeah, you got Valkyrie's like Thunderstrike.
Sort of.
With titties. Okay, well, that's Secret Avengers. Now, the second thing I'm going to talk about this week, you might see, if you have the video up, you'll see in my hands, it's rather large. This week, I'm going to talk about the Muppets.
It's all about size with you, right?
Oh, my God, the Muppets.
Oh, wow.
Now, what this is, ladies and gentlemen, this is a magazine format. That's why it's big. Magazine format, 96 pages. Reprinting of Roger Langridge's Muppet Show four-issue miniseries, which was done for Boom Studios a year or two ago. I learned it existed, basically, when I heard a review for it in another podcast a year or two ago when it came out. I thought, well, that sounds good. I'll get that. And that was the day that I learned Boom Studios' Disney stuff didn't ship outside of the U.S.
Oh.
Yeah. But since Marvel then went on to buy Disney... Since Disney then went on to buy Marvel, as their...
I don't think anyone could ever buy Disney.
As their licensing agreements with Boom have expired, they have, logically enough, not renewed them because they now own their own comic publishing company. So they've started out doing a couple of these magazine-sized reprints. They've done one for Cars. They got some other Pixar stuff coming up. And they've done the Muppets. So this magazine reprints all four issues of Langridge's Muppet Show. Roger Langridge did the Fin Fang Four comedy strips for Marvel. And we mentioned Thor the Mighty Avenger earlier. He wrote that. Chris Samnee drew it. He writes and draws all four issues of this. This is the first four issues. Boom did a couple of minis and then started an ongoing. This is the first four-issue miniseries in its entirety. So that is four 22-page issues plus four ads for $6.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a large... It's an oversized...
Now, is it art? Yeah. What does the art look like in it?
Just hold it up to you. I'll show you the cover
because
of it.
We know what Muppets look like, but... Oh, wow. Animal looks good. Sweetums! They got Sweetums.
Oh, that looks pretty good. I like the art.
That's the cover of issue number one, but it's Langridge's artwork. Now, what needs to be understood here is that this is not like a story that runs across four issues or anything like that. This is not some kind of Muppet adventure. This is the Muppet Show in comic book format.
Oh,
this
wow.
This is the Muppet living in a theater, and the comic is... Two
so is it like a bunch of different sketches and stuff? Like, it jumps around?
And two-page sketches separated by some kind of through story.
You get the old men make fun of the sketch, and then it moves on to another sketch. Is that what happens?
Yes.
it opens with a Muppet newscast reporting that the Muppet Show has moved to the comic book format, and then every issue opens with a double-page splash of what is, you know, essentially a rendition of the theme music. You know, Gonzo's up there in the O of the Muppet Show blowing his trumpet. Something different happens in every issue. But you know that they have the voice of the Muppet Show down perfectly when first double page spread, Statler and Waldorf, a Muppet Show comic book? Oh no, they're back to corrupt a whole new medium. Why is it called a medium? Because it's rarely well done.
Yes.
Awesome.
It is. The three stories in each, the first issue is about Kermit getting wistful for the swamp. The second issue is about Fozzie trying to reinvent his set whenever he feels he's lost his touch. The third issue is about an insurance agent trying to insure the theater, and Scooter has to try and find out what species Gonzo is so they can fill out all the forms properly. And the fourth issue is whenever they can't book a special guest and they have to bring a psychic in, but the psychic bleeds everybody dry with phony predictions.
Oh, my
and
God.
And drives E into a furious rage. And, of course, you get pigs in space, you get Muppet Labs, you get Veterinarian's Hospital, you get all of this stuff in here. And pigs in space!
Awesome.
Nice.
Wow.
I gotta tell. There were moments, you know, where I was laughing genuinely quite hard at this. I just about lost it with the Swedish Chef in the first issue. Robin,
okay, wait, the Swedish Chef, does he have regular hands or does he have human hands? Does he have Muppet hands or does he have human hands?
Well, it's all cartoon artwork, so...
McFeely, cannot mention the Swedish Chef without doing a Swedish Chef impression. You know this. We will be... canceled. You don't do that.
Cole's question first. The whole comic is basically a Muppet Show without the physical limitations of having to use puppets. So if a gag requires that some Muppet walks somewhere or that their legs be seen, yes, you do see some of the Muppet's legs. Observe the cover to issue two, for instance. Fozzie just standing there. So the Swedish Chef is just drawn as a Muppet. So his hands are drawn in the same style as everything else, so it's hard to tell, really. But the idea of this Swedish Chef scene in particular is that with Kermit feeling wistful for the swamp, Robin gets a recipe for lily pad goulash and says,
he'll either be delighted or he'll remember why he left the swamp in the first place. Either way, we're golden.
So he grabs the Swedish Chef and gets him to help. You know, Chef, I need your help. Can I ask you to whip something up?
Her burst if her de burden.
Yes!
It's full of the O's with the slashes through it and umlauts and all sorts of...
Oh my God.
You see this recipe? I need you to prepare it for Uncle Kermit.
Benton Merkirken de Perfer.
No, how can I make this clearer? Me want you to cook dish for frog. See?
Dermvit Herm Kermit Gash Mark 6. Gash Mark 6. Okay, yeah, I think we're getting somewhere. Good ass frogs at Gash Mark 6. Yeah, yeah. Kirk and the Froggy Froggy.
Oh, God. No.
Of course, he grabs Robin and stuffs him in a pot. Kirk and the Froggy Froggy. And then it's the, but then like that's backstage, and then the next page is the one page like the Swedish Chef's actual sketch where he drags the pot with Robin onto the stage and tries to do the things. Now to put pair the froggy froggy for the poot, take the big poot and put the poot in the shoot. And then Robin tries to burst out of the pot. Stop, stop, you've got this all wrong. Hey, froggy, you're Stern, Stern Poot.
Oh my gosh.
But you get the general
idea. Oh God.
When I say this is the Muppet Show, like it's full of songs as well. So, and I don't really know how made up songs with no music that you can't know what they sound like work. But by Christ, they work. You get like the last bit, the issue one ends like with Kermit being convinced by Robin to go out on stage and sing a little song called the Pond Where I Was Born, and it's real not easy being green, sitting on the root of the tree in the middle of the lake, plinky plunking about how the swamp is actually always going to be in his heart, and that word that brings him out of it. Aww. You know, it's genuinely like touching Muppet stuff as well, you know. And then, as I say, the second issue is about Fozzie trying to. There's some really great little in jokes hidden in the in like when Fozzie goes looking through comedy books, you know. There's one book that he reads. What is it called? Dan Leno: How I Earned $4 shillion a year by mocking the working classes. Ornithology for the exceedingly dim. Bird titles like that.
Oh my God.
And there, I love the Muppet Lab. I always love the Muppet Lab sequences anyway, but there's one here where Bunsen and Beaker try to bring a piece of cheese to life so that it will have a greater.
The principle is simple. This cheese came from cows with a greater than average sense of humor. The cheese has then been aged to the point where it's ready to walk out the door by itself. And all that is required is a jolt to awaken its higher synaptic processes. And Bob, as they say, is your uncle. Beaker, if you please. Meep.
And of course, what ensues?
Yeah. God.
And the cheese, of course, comes to life and starts telling bad jokes.
Oh my God.
Good animate food is absolutely something you would have seen on the Muppet Show, you know? Get back in the lab where you belong! Veterinarian's Hospital. You remember how in Veterinarian's Hospital every sketch would end with the announcer and all the Muppets would look up really confused, unable to tell where it was coming from? Well, it's a caption box in the comic.
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
I'm just going through picking out favorite bits, like Fozzie keeps trying to reinvent his comedy idea, so he takes some physical comedy. He takes some cues from Gonzo. He dresses up in this bat suit, and he climbs a ladder, and jumps off of it onto a trampoline, and then just like every time he bounces up on the trampoline, Rizzo and the other rats throw a pie in his face.
Okay, Svengali, wrap it up. We're out of pies. Now you see. Buster Keaton would have made that work.
Okay, Keely, I gotta ask you this. Now, do you read this out loud to yourself with all the voices? Or do they just play in your head?
I think you have to record it so that you can listen to it when you want to read it again.
Oh, here's a great one from the third issue. Chicken Lake.
Zoe
and Camilla do ballet. It's utterly silent. But don't try and pretend you don't hear playing in your head.
Oh my God.
Hey, that's not been on the Muppet Show. Do you think Gonzo is?
Well, I always thought he was some kind of anteater.
Clearly the result of science gone mad. Not that we scientists go mad, you understand.
Her Burke de Umla de Ern and Berkey Burke. Doctor! Doctor! Ah! So, If it hasn't come up, yes, I strongly recommend going out and reading The Muppet Show. I don't know how many comic stores are going to have this because it's an odd size. It is all just reprints, and it's The Muppets. But, you know, get them to order it in if you can. It's only $5.99 for four full issues in wow. magazine format. It's bloody hysterical, and it just reminds why is The Muppet Show not on television anymore? Could somebody just tell me that, you know?
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it made any proof that the idea was still completely viable and funny with 2000s humor. This is it. You know,
maybe people need to go see that movie. Then maybe we'll get something with Muppets.
Yeah, that comes out what, Thanksgiving.
It's like November, I think.
Yeah,
February.
Oh, I'm sorry, McFeely doesn't have Thanksgiving. He's one of those people.
It's still not. as I say, this is the original miniseries, and Marvel are doing some more of these. Thankfully, now they're not doing them in any kind of order, and as this should make clear, it doesn't really matter because each issue is a self-contained thing anyway. I mean, Boom did a couple of, did at least one, I forget which one it was, but they did a couple of, like, the classical Muppet novels as well, like Christmas Carol, Treasure Island. They did a mini-series about, I can't remember what classical novel it was, but it was Muppet something, I forget what. You know, that was another mini-series. But Boom did start doing an ongoing, and Marvel does have another magazine of a collection of issues from the ongoing plan sometime in the next 2 months as well. So you could maybe, if you can't get a hold of this one, you could get your retailer to order that for you. Strongly recommended. Bloody funny. Bork, bork, bork.
Nice.
Awesome.
Awesome. So that brings us to the end of the show with Prelude to Spider Island,
or as some might call it, part one.
Part one. Yeah, it's kind of yeah.
That's what it is.
It's basically part one.
I mean, there's so much content leading into it that yeah, that
oh my
feels
God,
like part one.
Like there are like three issues of content in this issue.
This
amazing.
Is huge, yeah. huge.
666 through 668.
So, well, I don't even know where to start on this. I guess at the beginning. Chris, you're better at this than I am. Why don't you?
Yeah. Alrighty.
You have more of the back history than I do on some of this. So.
Well, there's no main through line to the story in this. I mean, a large part of this is just putting... It's not even a case of putting the pieces in play. It's just showing you where all of Spider-Man's supporting... Because, I mean, you know, that's a big thing that Brand New Day and Dan Slott on Spider-Man have done. I've brought something back that was really lost throughout Straczynski's run and for a good time before that as well, which was the idea of Spider-Man with a supporting cast. Because if you look back at the 60s stuff, you know, 50%, I mean, not 50%, but like maybe a third of the stuff is about the ongoing soap opera world of Spider-Man and the trials and romantic tribulations that all the surrounding members of the cast are part of as well. So although Spidey is, you know, it's, you know, if you'll pardon the pun, Spider-Man at the center of a web of characters.
Oh, well, I like how you did that.
I see what you did there. That's...
I think I stole that from somewhere else, but I don't remember where. We've got, I mean, Spidey is on two Avengers teams. He's on the Fantastic Four. He has a job. He has a girlfriend. And you know what? He's loving it all. He is not, oh, I have no time for anything. I can't do anything. He's like, he's got, I got bank. I got cred. I got woman. All in. Or Spider-Man.
Yeah, I love the part where he's like, after he's stopped these thugs from robbing this place, he's like doing this thing where he's switching out his web cartridge or something, and he's like, bam, check it out, just did it, mid-air cartridge swap, and there was nobody there to see me do it.
You know. But everything is not going so well for Jonah Jameson, for instance, whose approval ratings are down since he's still staunchly anti-Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is doing nothing but consistent, well-recognized good throughout the city. You know, he helps the young allies, that is, beat Hydro Man in the space of two pages with a little freezing web cartridge.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Awesome. He goes quickly to work and shows that this little freezing web cartridge is... equipped it to work as like cryogenic technology that allows things to be completely safely frozen and unfrozen. Money in the bank. And while he's there, he gets a phone call from Carly, who, following up on last issue's hint, we didn't talk about the last issue, but in the last issue, Carly was at a dinner with Aunt May and Jonas Sr., or Jameson Sr., Jonas Dash. Yeah. And we see that a piece of cutlery gets stuck to a web that comes out of her wrist. So she's developed spider powers off the back. Of course, you know, before we go any further, the central thing about Spider Island, as you'll probably have seen from the ads, is that everybody in Manhattan... Well, it doesn't look like it's going to be everybody. You know, it just looks like a large number of people from Manhattan.
Yeah. They're just kind of picking people and going to create chaos or something. I don't know.
Well, Carly is one of them, and she hasn't told Peter yet, and she wants to, but if there's one thing he's having a little trouble finding time for, it is that.
Yeah.
They're going to... that evening. While on the phone, Peter's nearly run over by a school bus and pulled out of the way by Flash, not by Flash Thompson, by Phil Urich, Hobgoblin. I love this bit where he highlights, oh, can't believe it. I nearly got hit by a bus, I lost my spider sense. Oh, there could be evil right in front of me. And I
so campy, it was great.
Like Hobgoblin standing in front of you, you've no idea. Great,
that's
love it.
Awesome.
Love it. Last issue as well, May and Jay moved to Boston. Which is obviously a method to prevent Spider-May, I think, essentially, is why they've been moved out of the city for now. This is their last night in New York in this one, but the spider virus is actually being spread by bed bugs, topical.
Very nice.
It's been unleashed upon the city by the Jackal. Yes, the Jackal is back. Don't know who asked for it. Don't know who thought it was a good idea, but it hasn't proved to be a bad one just yet. You know, we're picking gently at the surface of some bad spider concepts from the 1990s here. Just like, pick, you know. Watch it, you know. But, I mean, it's not like there was never a completely open method for the Jackal to come back. Yeah. The Jackal, for those fortunate readers not in the know, was the mastermind behind the clone saga. He was responsible for creating all the Spider-Man clones. And he died falling off the top of a building in Maximum Clonage. But, of course, there was always the possibility that it was just a clone. Hey, I guess it was. They don't even bother addressing it. I'm quite right.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
Sure they will. Slot wouldn't just let it go like that, you know. Spidey helps the FF take down some AIM. Venom is also there. Betty Brant is in the hospital after the events of the previous issue. Hospital's going crazy with people developing spider powers. There's so much going on. Spidey attends a poker game at Avengers Mansion, does some more training with Shang-Chi.
I love the poker thing. Get
had we seen... Well, and also, had we seen Peter's costume that he had basically developed the three-way unstable molecule costume now?
See, I wasn't entirely sure if this was supposed to be something he had cooked up in the lab, or if this was his Fantastic Four costume.
I thought it was.
No, this is his regular costume. It has three modes: solid black, regular Spider-Man, and then FF.
I think this is supposed to be the costume the FF gave him, because they said that it could be changed to look like his ordinary costume as well.
Yeah, so I don't know if he like modified it with them or something along those lines, but. But anyway, that's a great way for Peter, because that's the whole thing. It's like, God, he's got to change clothes just moving from one to the next.
No,
nope, doesn't. Just turns black. And so that is an awesome addition. And again, it's kind of that science angle for Peter and kind of cool as well. But yes, gambling with...
I love the poker thing, because they talk about, like, why didn't you guys ever invite me here before? It's like, well, you had the spider sense. We don't let people with that power and, you know, mind readers do the poker thing. That, now you've got money.
I love this little exchange he has with the thing on the way into the mansion as well, talking about MJ was just on the phone to him beforehand, and then things like, you and the ex, what happened there, huh? Long story. I'm just saying, you guys were good together. Drop it. She was hot. She had a real girl next door thing going. From Yancey Street. The girls next door are missing prominent teeth.
You know if she's seen anybody? Because maybe I can. I do not know you.
I do not. Madam Webb, let slip that there are great dangers coming and that Spidey will be forced to take a life before this is all out. And as he swings off with her saying ominous portentous things, he's just getting really annoyed. But he's also being followed by shadowy people swinging around on the web. And he goes to meet with Carly. They can't talk about what it is because he's completely tired. They'll talk about it in the morning. And then then some interesting stuff that I wasn't really seeing happened. Now, we've got Jackal, and we saw briefly, I think, before, this large spider guy in a hoodie that's following him around. And he's got a whole lab staffed with other Jackals, Miles Warren clones. And there's a dude in a tube. And what's going on there?
There's a lady that's talking with red bubbles.
A lady, red speech bubbles, who she's in charge. She's giving the instructions from afar, it would seem. Because she's not anywhere
on
panel.
She's like telling him what to do. I mean, he's not the main bad guy.
He is not behind it. And that immediately made the whole idea more interesting to me. Because Jackal. But if there's somebody else behind it, I mean, I'll be honest with you. The first thing I thought of when you've got a city that's being transformed into insect people, I was really terrified with the immediate thought that this might be the queen. If anybody read the Spider-Man Avengers Disassembled crossover.
Oh my god, he got his webbing from her and mutated
into a giant spider and then gave birth to his own human body.
Oh yeah. I remember us talking about that.
No, don't bring her back.
Did we lose Nicole?
No, I'm here.
Yeah, I might try your video one more time.
My video's not working.
So that was interesting. But I did completely misread this scene. This last scene is not staged that well. The dialogue doesn't line up too well. It makes it, on first reading, I thought that they were talking about the person in the tube was Kane.
That's what I was thinking.
That's my understanding, I thought as well.
But is it not?
No, the spider guy is Kane.
The guy with the legs.
Yeah, the guy who's walking around behind him the whole issue, that has been Kane. The voice says it worked well enough on Parker there, didn't it? Yeah, but that isn't Parker. the juxtaposition of the dialogue and the artwork, it made me think the guy in the tube was Kane and whatever. Yeah. But no, whoever is in the tube is a prime specimen and the real firstborn of this era. Whatever that means, bit of a mystery. And then the switch is thrown, and he is transformed into a large gray spider being who I believe he is the Tyrant. No, hang on. So he is a spider king. Kane is the tarantula now. Because you may remember whenever Kane died in Grim Hunt, he then burst up out of the grave at the end, and the caption said, "And you will know him as Tarantula." because I was leafing there's a little free preview pamphlet booklet given out at comic stores last week, which was a big ad for Spider Island. And there's a little caption points out that these two spider beings are called Tarantula and Spider King. So Kane is Tarantula. So this new gray guy who has come out of the tube and been created and demands to know why are you dong is.
That's literally how he talks, so we're not making fun of him.
Yes, I was just desperately confused because it's like then the Jackal says, "Kane, take him out now," and I'm like, "Why? I didn't know which one."
Yeah.
Kane is the guy in the hoodie.
Okay.
And
that's good.
Then the issue concludes with plenty of normal people who have got spidery web powers swinging above the streets of New York. The stage is set. Spider Island is a go, and a go it is.
And we don't know who the lady is. We never see her face.
No,
we don't know the person that's actually pulling the strings. We still don't know who that is.
Interesting.
Of course, Ben Reilly is a pop guess for the identity of the person in the tube, but they wouldn't, surely. Ben disintegrated into dust his last season.
Didn't they say Scarlet Spider is coming back? Didn't I hear that somewhere?
Peck.
I don't know if it's supposed to be Ben Reilly, but I heard somewhere that Scarlet Spider is coming back.
Let it alone.
Yeah, just don't.
But anyway, that's the future. We'll see how it goes. What a great issue.
Wow. Good stuff.
Really good.
I'm ready. I'm fired up now. I'm like, let's do this.
This is written by Dan Slott. This is art by Stefano Caselli, who we last saw in the book Major League, drawing the Alistair Smythe Spider Slayer Scorpion storyline. We love him, don't
yep.
we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we do. There's just so many little things happening within this issue. As I say, Spidey at the heart of a web of characters, restoring, just reminding us to what an extent Slott has succeeded in restoring this lost element to Spidey's world, and also managing to present us with a Spidey who is totally in control of his own world, or as in control of his world as any superhero can ever be. But it's just really nice to see a happy Spidey where everything's just going pretty well. He's got his shit together. His life is balanced. All he really needs back is his spider sense, and everything will be hunky-dory.
He's having fun. That's why I like it. He's having fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's it, isn't it? It's just
that's all you really need. I mean, crap happens in his life. Bad things are going to happen. People are going to get hurt. Things are going to happen that's going to probably ruin his life. But as long as there's those moments where he's having fun still, just finding the time to have fun, that's what I want.
Yep. Yeah, this is good. It's
such an amazingly dense issue as well. There are like two or three issues of content in this. I was reading this for a long time.
How awesome would it be, though? I mean, it does kind of seem we're getting back into Clone Saga territory. How awesome would it be if Slott could, like, make that work? Like, suddenly make that all relevant and make it work.
Truly, that would be his ultimate test. And I wouldn't put it
He would basically, like, quit. He'd be like, I'm done. I cannot do
I fixed the Clone Saga.
I fixed the Clone Saga. I'm
peace.
Done.
Just peace. Walk out. I win at life. Done.
But we're not going to hold him to that high standard.
No. I mean, that is a tall, tall order, but, that would, you know.
I just love it. There is something different happening on every... I guess, like, literally every two pages of this comic. Every one or two pages is a different character, is a different subplot, is a different group of characters, Spidey interacting with somebody else. It doesn't feel rushed. It doesn't feel crammed. It's just a wonderfully well-done comic.
Carly, what's going to go on with Carly there? I am so looking forward to that.
What's so typical about a comic of this style? We've reviewed a lot of comics that are these kind of prelude styles. And typically, what is our review? It's just kind of putting the pieces into place and, you know, not much to say, blah, blah, blah. This is totally not that. Like, this is really good stuff. Everything made sense. Everything flowed. Everything worked within the context. And like you said, didn't feel rushed, didn't feel like it was just thrown together. Good stuff.
Yeah, I had to look at it again just to make sure that it did say prelude, because I honestly thought it was the first part.
Yeah.
Next issue, they can call it part one, and they might get a few more seals.
But take,
you know, it's basically two part ones to put
seals. But take note, creators, this is how you put the pieces in place and make an interesting story.
An entertaining story.
Yes.
A funny story.
Yeah.
Steve?
I laughed out loud when he's like, this is my Cryo Freeze 2000. He's like, Peter, you can't just put 2000 in front of everything and make it.
Yeah,
like,
that was great.
We've talked about this. Like, what about 3000? This is perfect.
I'm going to enjoy it whenever they manage to calm things back down so we can get another look at the people but the people from Horizon Labs, you know. I've already forgotten the name of this girl here who just loves the worms.
Yeah.
Killed them! It's okay, they're fine. Turns it off. They go, oh, look at him go, he's precious, you're precious. They're worms. But, you know.
Nice.
It's just very cute, you know. And we had that big teaser a couple of months ago about what's coming up in Spider-Man, you know, and this was part of it. But then finding out who the other guy in that lab is as well is part of it. So Horizon Labs is going to grow to something bigger. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that take center stage as well. But that's in the future. Spider Island is going to run for the next 2 months, 3 months.
Three months.
No, wait a minute. 4 months.
4 months, yeah, all the way through October. Well, into November. Epilogue will be November, so yeah. So yeah.
Oh, no, sorry, no, hang on, I read that wrong. Well, no, okay, but sorry. August, September, and October are the core story, and then there's an epilogue in November. So yeah, 3 months, really.
Yeah,
are there minis for Spider Island or one-shots? Are they doing something for that?
Yeah, there's it's tying in Spidey itself and Venom. And then everything, there's some one or two tie-in issues of Herc and a single issue of Black Panther and Heroes for Hire. No, there's not even an issue of Heroes for Hire, just one or two issues of Herc and an issue of Black Panther. Then there are three-issue miniseries, Deadly Hands of Kung Fu, Spider-Girl, Marvel just won't let go, and Cloak and Dagger, and I'm getting Cloak and Dagger, because Cloak and Dagger is by Nick Spencer with art by Emma Rios.
Oh,
from the
maybe I should get that one.
I'm going to get that. And then there's a bunch of one-shots. There's like a Deadly... Remember, everybody has to get the Deadly Foes one-shot, because that's the one that's written by Slott, Gage, and Van Lent.
Oh, gosh.
And then comes out next week. When does that
come? Oh, my gosh.
That's out in August at some point.
Nice.
And then there's an Avengers one-shot. There's a Spider-Woman one-shot. That's by Van Lenting. It's out. And there's an I Heart New York one shot as well, which is written by Greg Rucka and Kelly Sue DeConnick, among others. So there's some top notch creators working on the little side projects on this. So I'm getting less than I'm not, but I'm cherry picking out the best stuff most definitely.
Yeah, nice. So this is good. This could be fun. Maybe more uplifting and interesting than Fear Itself so far.
Well, yes. There's. To be fair, that's kind of the point.
Yeah, yeah, I would think so. So, awesome. So there you go. Comics for the week. Good stuff.
And the strong alike.
Yes. So, yeah, that's it. Again, if you want to check out the Avengers panel that we did, I posted that on the website, YouTube video. Didn't make an audio version for that. So check out the YouTube and join the YouTube channel while you're there, because that's good stuff. So I'll also preview that I am going to be on Superhero Time tomorrow, recording tomorrow. I don't know if I'll do it live or not. I can stream the show live if XV wants, but that'll be up to him. Otherwise, the show will be posted on Tuesday. So if you want more of me, and why would you? You can listen to me there. Otherwise, we have a ton of great shows on the network, and listen to all those and websites and all that stuff is available. End of the show with all that fun information. So, yeah, that's it. Anything else? Any previews? Anything coming up?
Actually, I just wanted to mention, because I'm putting it back in its bag, Muppets. This is called Meet the Muppets. That's the title of this, if you want to ask your retailer for it. I forgot to mention it.
Awesome.
It's called Meet the Muppets. Ask for it by name.
There you go.
Awesome.
Awesome. Good deal. All right. Well, hey, crew, thanks for the show. Good job, as we usually try to do here.
Sorry, my video cut out.
Not a problem. You know, it's the modern world. Try not to fear the stash too much. I'm going to be growing the goatee back out, so that'll be.
Did you mess up on shaving or something?
No, I went to an 80s themed birthday party yesterday. And
cool.
I had to pull it out. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can see some of the pictures. I post those on Twitter. Or watch this video and you can see just the mustache. But I did have a whole get up. I had like a bright colored shirt under a on. It was great. My wife looked really great. She had this whole flock of seagulls hair thing going on. So yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Go check out those pictures.
Good time. Good time and all. Anyway, enough about that. We'll get out of here. So again, for Chris, for Nicole, and for myself, JD, thanks so much for joining us. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.